Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. The third homeless person in San Francisco has tested positive for COVID-19. The first person tested positive on Thursday at a navigation center. On Sunday, two more people tested positive in the city's largest shelter. City officials say all three people are now isolating in hotel rooms. San Francisco Mayor London Breed announced plans to use the Moscone Center, where homeless people at risk for COVID would shelter in place. Yesterday, Street Sheet editor Quiver Watts ran a story and a photo of on-the-ground mats intended for homeless people inside the Moscone Center. A source told Watts the center had no hand-washing stations or bathroom facilities. And after a major public outcry, city officials now say they will house homeless people in hotel rooms. Trent Rohr, director of the San Francisco Human Services Agency, said we are now shifting gears at Moscone West. San Francisco says it will now move those older than 60 or those with underlying health conditions into hotel rooms. So far, they say 150 people have been moved into hotels. Joining us with the latest are two guests. Joe Wilson is executive director and a former client of Hospitality House, a community-based organization providing opportunities, resources, and shelter for homeless people. Yesterday, Mission Local reported that the residents of Hospitality House became the first shelter in San Francisco to relocate to a vacant private hotel. Hi, Joe. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, Rose. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Hanging in there. Thank you so much for joining us, Joe. We're also joined by Tim Redmond, founder of 48 Hills, an independent news site focusing on San Francisco politics and culture. Tim Redmond has been a political and investigative reporter in San Francisco for more than 30 years and served as executive editor of the Bay Guardian. Hi, Tim. Welcome back to the show.
Happy to be on your show.
Well, great to have you. Joe, I want to start off with you. I want to give credit to Mission Local because Joe Eskenazi wrote a pretty long piece about Hospitality House residents relocating to a hotel. Tell us how this happened. Joe reports that the move was spearheaded by Supervisor Matt Haney and aided by a donation from the United Methodist Church.
That's correct. Supervisor Haney and his staff approached us a little over a week ago, asked us if hotel rooms could be made available, would we be interested in moving our shelter residents out of the shelter into the hotel rooms. Had a conversation with our shelter staff and team. They said absolutely yes. And so we proceeded to make preparation. Individual conversations with the shelter residents, identifying medically vulnerable residents. The goal was and always has been to move as many people out of a potentially, you know, dangerous congregate sleeping situation into safer accommodations, and we were able to do that this past weekend.
Joe, can you tell us about the conversations you had with shelter residents? What do they think about moving to hotel rooms?
Well, I think people were understandably nervous about what happens after a month. So the current shelter-in-place order expires on May 3rd, and so folks had some questions about what happens then. We couldn't offer any guarantees for their right to return to shelter. We pushed very hard on that. We are still pushing. We don't have an answer for that or a commitment by the Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing to allow that. And so we had to explain the risks to people. We were pretty clear that we felt their current accommodations in the shelter were also medically risky. We don't have the space to provide the physical distancing that's been recommended by the health department and CDC. And so we urged folks to take advantage of even this temporary reprieve to get them to a healthier shelter-in-place accommodation.
Joe, what are the logistics at the hotel? as you said, some people are medically vulnerable. Some people have mental health issues. Can you talk about who's going to care for people in the hotel rooms? How will that work?
Essentially, we have, for us, it's an alternative shelter placement. So our staff have, you know, maintained support for people. We believe that most of the residents that were in our shelter, and because it's a smaller shelter, a more intimate setting, we have an opportunity to really develop relationships with people and understand their needs and their ability to self-care. Most of our residents can actually do that. For those needing additional support, we are available for that. We are doing multiple room checks every day. We're taking people's temperature every day. We're recording that information. The food service and meals are still in place. We have a gathering space in the hotel, to serve meals as a group. And so we are continuing that level of support for people. All of our support staff and other of our programs that are still operating are trained in administering Narcan in the event of an overdose. And so we feel that we're as prepared as we can be at this point to provide the support that people need.
Tim Redmond, you wrote a piece recently about what's happening in San Francisco. You point out that it's much cheaper to rent hotel rooms than to pay for the ICU at San Francisco General. Based on the reporting that you've done and the people you've spoken to, can you talk about the logistics involved in housing people in hotel rooms and providing them with the support that they need?
Well, you know, I would quote Supervisor Hillary Ronan at a press conference last week, where she basically said, "We have the hotel rooms, we have the money, we have the staff." Right? There are 30,000 vacant hotel rooms, and the mayor, by law, in a state of emergency, has the authority to essentially seize the hotel rooms and use them. But she doesn't need to do that because the hotel council has said they will make them available. The hotel owners are not opposed to this, and would make 10,000 rooms available at a reasonable cost, which, as I say, is way cheaper than the cost of the hospitalizations and the deaths and the tragic disaster that could happen if this virus spreads through the homeless population. So what are the logistics? Well, we actually have, in the city, we have staff who are able to and are trained to triage homeless people and figure out what their needs are, who needs mental health care, who needs substance abuse treatment, who has other medical issues, who is homeless but completely can care for themselves. And what the logistics would be, that the city would simply go, would invite homeless people to come into hotel rooms and determine at a screening what needs they have. And we have social workers who work with homeless people now. We have the staff to do this. And the hotel rooms are available. It boggles my mind that the mayor's office hasn't already done this. It's like, if we have the ability to shelter people, and I think that Joe has made it very clear that the logistics work out, that Hospitality House knows how to do this. They're able to do it. They're able to talk to people and figure out what staff they need on hand, what counselors they need on hand, how to make this work. We could do this citywide, and it's a public health necessity, and it just makes common sense. I don't understand why we haven't done this for all of the homeless people, the entire homeless population in San Francisco.
Based on the interviews you've done, Tim, why not?
It's very hard to understand why not. Trent Rohrer, who, as the head of the Human Services Agency, seems to be the mayor's point person on this, has, if you email Trent and ask about this, you get a preset auto response email, which basically says it would not be fiscally prudent at this time, given the fact that the city is going to face a budget deficit because we're going to head into a recession. And I don't know whose numbers he's using, but it seems like it's way more fiscally prudent to save lives today and to keep people healthy today than to try to treat in a very expensive way. I mean, it's not cheap putting someone in the intensive care unit at San Francisco General. That's thousands and thousands of dollars a day. the same as it is in other hospitals, and overwhelming the hospital system, causing all of that trauma and problems, is way more expensive and costly in the long term than putting people in hotel rooms for a month or two.
Joe Wilson, what are your thoughts? How do you explain this?
Well, there is no rational explanation. I think, in effect, what they claim, what the city leaders claim to be trying to avoid, i.e. a hospital surge that overwhelms an already overwhelmed medical system, what they claim to be trying to avoid, the longer they wait, that's assuredly going to happen, that the medical system is going to be overwhelmed. From our perspective, we feel that the this current situation really is like the entire city of San Francisco should be viewed as one giant field hospital, where we have to marshal our collective public and private resources all with one aim, you know, to use another different metaphor, like get the healthy people off the ship now. And we have multiple options here, multiple resources to deploy now, and there's no reason to wait any longer to get people from the outside inside, because we know that that improves everybody's health outcomes when they're not exposed to the elements as well as all of the other contagion that are circulating.
And also, Joe, I want to step back because I've been reading a lot of stories about this issue. I mean, it's not just San Francisco, it's across the country. And, you know, we always read the homeless. Let's just put a face on people. I mean, we're talking about a wide range of people. You mentioned medically vulnerable people. Of course, people with mental health issues. We've got veterans. We have older women. We have people who recently lost their jobs, people who were evicted, you know, say 6 months ago. I mean, we're talking about a very wide range of people, right?
Correct. And fundamentally, you know, it's someone's son or daughter that's on the street right now that is part of our human family. And we need to do everything we can do, everything we know how to do, as fast as we can do it, to make sure that everybody in the family is safe. And it's unfortunate that so many, you know, so many of the inequities and the injustices that people far smarter than I have talked about for decades are on full display for the world to see. The systematic gutting of all of our public infrastructure, not only our public health infrastructure, but all of our public institutions, our emergency response system, all of it, has been systematically and intentionally dismantled. The fact that our workforce development system intentionally trains people for jobs and industries that we know going in are not going to pay them anything close to a living wage, and those are the people who are the most vulnerable in any kind of economic downturn. Our public nonprofit infrastructure, which in effect has become over time a proxy for all the injustices and oppression that exists in our society, has been overwhelmed and frankly entrusted with trying to hold up all of the infrastructure supports that have been gutted by, frankly, this neoliberal, you know, capitalist economic system. And we have an opportunity to do something about that, to make some of that right now, by not exposing people who we know are always exposed, always the most vulnerable, to at least do something about that right now, and we have the capacity to do it. It is unconscionable, it is immoral, and is absolutely indefensible that we have not done this.
Joe Wilson is Executive Director of Hospitality House, a community-based organization providing resources and shelter for homeless people. Joe used to be a client of Hospitality House, and yesterday Mission Local reported that the residents of Hospitality House became the first shelter in the city to relocate to a vacant private hotel. Tim Redmond is founder of 48 Hills, an independent site focusing on San Francisco politics and culture. One of Tim's latest pieces is called Breed. That is San Francisco Mayor London Breed. Administration says it's not fiscally prudent to get homeless off the streets. If you have a question or a comment for our guests, if you'd like to talk about what is happening in your community, in your neighborhood, I know that in my neighborhood, and I live near the Upper Haight, I regularly see people sleeping in front of storefronts on a regular basis. And actually, we just got a social media comment from Joe who says, there's a whole new tent encampment on Waller and Schrader. The homeless folks on Haight are congregating in groups for warmth and safety no matter what the city does. It's never enough to make more than a dent. It's so awful and sad. Well, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org or tweet us at yourcallradio. Tim, let's talk about what has happened just in the last couple of days. The first homeless person tested positive on Thursday at a navigation center. And then on Sunday, two more people tested positive in the city's largest shelter. City officials say all three people are isolating in hotel rooms. Then we got word that the city planned to use the Moscone Center, where homeless people at risk of COVID-19 would shelter in place. Yesterday, Street Sheet, which is an amazing paper put together by homeless people, their editor Quiver Watts ran a story and a photo of mats that are on the ground intended for homeless people inside Moscone. And this is a big center in San Francisco. And someone told Watts that the center had no hand washing stations or bathroom facilities. So walk us through the last couple days, Tim, and then what happened after there was a major public outcry over this Street Sheet story.
Yeah, well, all right. My opinion, the whole Moscone Center thing is the worst possible way to approach this problem, because what we're doing is taking people who are at risk, vulnerable, and putting them in a congregate setting. I mean, when you look at that picture, it shows mats on the floor about 5, maybe 6 feet apart, right? Hundreds of them. People are going to be congregating in a small space, and the disease is going to spread very, very quickly among that population. Right. So when people saw that picture and realized, you know, as Supervisor Haney said, this is the opposite of what we're supposed to be doing. This is the opposite of trying to isolate people. What it does, of course, put them in Moscone Center, it gets them out of sight, out of mind. It gets homeless people off the streets and into a place where most people walking around won't see them. It's as if we're trying to just hide this problem instead of solve it. Right. So when that came out and people republished that photo and Quiver's tweet went viral, everybody looked at it. Like, I think the outrage, this, anybody who looks at this can say, this isn't a solution. This is not what we should be doing. So now they're talking about, they're moving slowly to say, okay, vulnerable people, people over 60, people with underlying health conditions. Well, I will quote, this isn't me, this is Jenny Friedenbach, the director of the Coalition on Homelessness, says, medically, people who are homeless present as 25 years older than they are. Right, because of the trauma of being on the streets, there's terrible health impacts. People over 60, I mean, realistically, we should be talking about just about everybody who's on the streets is now in a very vulnerable situation. And the idea that we're just going to pick a small percentage of that population and put them in hotel rooms, number one, it shows that we can do it. We can put people in hotel rooms safely, that the city feels that it has the capacity to do this. We're just taking a small slice of the population. Today at noon, five supervisors will be holding an emergency press conference by Zoom and announcing that they're introducing emergency legislation immediately at the Board of Supervisors to require the city to put all homeless people in vacant hotel rooms. So that's five votes. If one more supervisor joins in, and I suspect that somebody probably will, that will be six votes, and then it will be in the mayor's desk. Is she going to veto that resolution and say, no, we're not going to do that? Or is she going to say, okay, it's time now. We don't have any, we're running out of time. There's already, the virus is already in two homeless shelters. It's going to be in more, and it spreads very, very quickly. So if two people tested positive at the multi-service center out of 350 residents there, there are hundreds more who were exposed.
It's also pretty remarkable, Tim, because San Francisco Supervisor Dean Preston actually started a GoFundMe campaign to raise money for these hotel rooms, and he got an overwhelming response.
Yes. As Hillary Ronan says, we have the money. We have the hotel rooms. We have the staff. Yes, it's it's just it boggles my mind that we have not moved on this more quickly.
I'm just looking at this GoFundMe campaign. Latest number, $72,000 has been raised by average people who want to house our unhoused neighbors in hotel rooms.
Yep. And there are there are very wealthy people in the city who the mayor is very friendly with, who she could call up and say, hey, Ron Conway, we need a couple million dollars. Ron Conway, who is a tech mogul, and some of the other big tech folks, whenever there's a political campaign for something that they don't like, they've got $1 million to raise to try to influence voters for their interests. How about kicking in some money now to help homeless people and save their lives?
Well, let's take a few callers. Let's go to Mark in San Francisco. Hi, Mark. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you. I'd like to know if there are any volunteer opportunities, what with the health concerns especially.
Yeah, thank you for that. Joe, any volunteer opportunities you can tell Mark about?
Absolutely. We've put a call out through our website, which is www.hospitalityhouse.org. We're asking for donations of supplies, masks, gloves, wipes. There's a host of community volunteers that are now making masks for us and a number of other organizations. We're going to need meals for shelter residents that are at the hotels. We think we will be able to handle that logistically, but we always need support with that. That's an opportunity for folks to participate. We also believe that it's important for the decision makers to hear from people like you. So picking up the phone or using your email or showing up directly to drop something off at City Hall, I think makes the point that the people of San Francisco are calling for decisive action. It's already 5 past midnight now, so we need to move, and we need to move fast. So everything that you can lend a hand with, making supplies, donating them, making scarves, masks, those things are helpful.
Well, thank you so much for the phone call and for the question about volunteering. Kevin, sorry, I have so many messages open here. I think it was Kevin who called in. Oh, no, sorry, Mark. Thank you for calling in, Mark. I also wanted to ask you, Joe, before we let you go, pre-COVID-19, as you said, it's very difficult to be homeless. People take buses to get to various food pantries. Sometimes they can bring in their gear. Sometimes they can't. They're constantly on the move. Unfortunately, the libraries have closed. We know why they had to close. But a lot of homeless people went to the libraries where they could just take a break. They could watch a movie. They could use the computer. They could wash up. Those resources are no longer there. So can you tell us what are you hearing from people on the streets about, where they're getting meals, where they're trying to wash their hands, where they're going for a break?
It is very hard on the street right now. Having been there before, I can tell you that even in the best of times, it's a very cold, lonely, isolating existence, to be on the street, to be ignored, to have people step around you, want to avoid you, don't like seeing you in their midst. And I think for us this past weekend, where we had an opportunity, the shelter team, which has been nothing short of phenomenal throughout all of this, had an opportunity to walk with folks from our shelter to hotel rooms, and the moment that people felt that their lives were important, their lives mattered to all of us here at Hospitality House, that was an emotional moment that was very profound for everyone who had an opportunity to experience it. And I would say that it is always an opportunity to answer the call to summon up the best of us in a crisis, to answer the call of our own humanity. I would urge our decision makers to think about what drew them to this work in the first place. And our first best responsibility is to each other. All lives matter. Every person is a potential asset. There are poets and dreamers and veterans and mothers and fathers and sisters and brothers on the streets of San Francisco. They are us. It's not them. It's us. And so when we abandon the least of us, we abandon the core essence of what our humanity is supposed to be. And I challenge all of our leaders to answer that call and to answer it today.
Joe Wilson is Executive Director of Hospitality House, a community-based organization providing resources and shelter for homeless people. Joe is a former client of Hospitality House, and yesterday Mission Local reported that residents there became the first shelter to relocate to a vacant private hotel. Joe, thank you so much for your work. Thank you for joining us. We'd love to have you back soon.
Thank you, Rose. You take care and the best to your family.
Thank you. You too. And Tim, final thoughts on how people can put pressure on city officials to really take this seriously?
The pressure point is the mayor's office. I mean, it's Mayor Breed and her office who can make this decision and do this. The supervisors are already on board. There is federal money for this. There will be more federal money. There is state money. There is local money. There is philanthropic money. Really, the point person on this is Mayor Lyndon Breed, and she's the one who has to make the decision that she wants to move on this.
All right, Tim. Well, thank you so much for all of your work, and thank you for joining us.
Of course, always happy to be on your show.
Thank you. Tim Redmond is founder of 48 Hills, an independent news site focusing on San Francisco politics and culture. We've got a long list of show ideas over the next couple of weeks, and we are going to also begin to call politicians to ask them to join us. Coming up after a break, we will talk about increased demand for food. We're going to find out how food banks and community organizations are meeting that demand. We'll be back after this.
This is Your Call on KALW Local Public Radio. If you have a perspective you haven't heard in today's conversation or a question that you feel needs to be answered, please join by calling at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255, toll free. You can also send an email to yourcall@kalw.org or post a comment or question at the show's website, yourcallradio.org, or tweet us at yourcallradio.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we're going to talk about how small businesses are coping with COVID-19. So many businesses have shut their doors, hopefully temporarily. They've also had to furlough or lay off employees. We're going to talk about how small businesses are dealing with the closures and then also dealing with cash flow. Right now, a lot of businesses say that loans are the only option, but a lot of businesses say, how are we supposed to pay back these loans without cash flow? So if you own a small business and you'd like to weigh in tomorrow, please email us, yourcall@kalw.org. Now we are going to talk about the growing need for food assistance in communities across the country. According to Feeding America, food banks are reporting an average 40% increase in demand. The COVID-19 crisis has created a new reality for food banks, largely run by volunteers, and it has created an unprecedented and serious dependence on food assistance. Joining us now are a couple of guests. Susan Bateson is Executive Director of the Alameda County Community Food Bank, also part of the Feeding America Network. Susan has been the Executive Director since 2001. In 2005, she was the first food bank leader in the nation to stop the distribution of carbonated beverages. Since then, the food bank has increased distribution of produce from 1 million to 20 million pounds annually. Hi, Susan. Welcome back to the show.
Well, good morning. How are you doing?
Good morning. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. We're
also joined by Kathleen Lopez-Landino, volunteer with the Food Pantry SF, located in the Potrero Hill neighborhood of San Francisco. Hi, Kathleen. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Great to have you. Susan, let's start off with you. Tell us what you're experiencing right now. What kind of demand are you seeing?
So we have an emergency food helpline at Alameda County Community Food Bank. We take calls from the community. About 50% of those callers have never accessed our services before. And we went from responding to 30 calls a day to 300 calls a day, which is unprecedented in the history of the helpline, which is more than 20 years old.
Wow, that is a huge jump. Susan, can you tell us how are you able, first off, your staff? Is it mostly volunteers?
So Alameda County Community Food Bank is a mid-sized nonprofit organization. We have over 100 regular full-time staff. So we're a pretty big organization, and we have depth. Half of our staff now works remotely. In fact, I'm speaking to you from my world headquarters at my kitchen counter at my home, and the other half of our staff is working in our facility, deployed to get food, bring food in, and get it out every day. Our operation has changed quite a bit in the past 3 weeks. One of the most significant changes we have made is we're making hundreds of emergency food bags a day to hand out to low-income or struggling households.
How are you meeting the demand, Susan, for so much more food now?
So the demand is great. We are hearing from a lot of seniors who are fragile and who are homebound or who are not able to go out to the grocery store. And we are grateful that they are contacting us, and we're also grateful for a strong senior services network of providers in Alameda County who are doing incredible work trying to serve this population and get food to them. We're also getting a lot of calls from households with young children. And one of the things that we've been able to do is hand out our emergency food bags with the distribution of school breakfasts and lunches. And that's been wonderful. And, you know, the food bank has been able to take bags of food to the school workers who are handing out the lunches. And when they're handing out the lunches and breakfasts, they're also handing out an emergency bag of food. Very, very helpful.
That is Susan Bateson, Executive Director of the Alameda County Food Bank. They are now getting 300 calls from people in need. 50% of those calls are first-timers. Kathleen, what kind of demand are you seeing at the food pantry in the Potrero Hill neighborhood of San Francisco?
Well, we're also experiencing increased demand. We are one of the largest food pantries in San Francisco, and we operate in partnership with the San Francisco Marin Food Bank. And we've seen, I would say, last week when we opened up for our reopening, we experienced about a 75% demand increase with families with young children, and principally Spanish-speaking. We also have seen an enormous increase in individuals who are homebound and are in severe need of home delivery services. And that's something that when we went into our planning following our brief closure to reassess how we could best safely provide for the needs of folks, we decided that home delivery was something that was going to be integral to our ability to serve the population. We're currently providing home delivery to folks who are vulnerable, disabled, or senior citizens.
And can you talk about how you are managing to meet this increased demand?
Well, so far, I feel like we've done fairly well. One of our things that we have done is we've switched our distribution day to Saturday. We usually distribute on Fridays, and that's helped us actually to muster additional volunteers who are really necessary for the food. In our case, what happens is the food bank delivers a truck of vegetables and produce, and we supplement that with things that we buy from the food bank. And volunteers are bagging the groceries from 10 o'clock until noon, which is a little more of a laborious process than what we usually do. We generally have a farmer's market style where people are able to shop for their groceries. And since we've moved to bag groceries, we have an increased demand for volunteers, especially because we've asked a number of volunteers not to come in because they're older. Mm. Significantly older, actually.
Kathleen Lopez-Landino is a volunteer with the food pantry in San Francisco. It's in the Potrero Hill neighborhood. And now I would like to welcome Lisa Scales to the show. Lisa is president and CEO of the Greater Pittsburgh Community Food Bank, one of the 200 food banks in the Feeding America Network. Hi, Lisa. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me on the show.
Well, Lisa, last week we saw, like so many people around the country, the video that the Pittsburgh Gazette captured of hundreds of cars lined up before your food bank even opened. According to this report, the line was miles long. Some people waited 5 hours just to get food. Volunteers served 1,700 families before you ran out and had to turn people away. Lisa, I'm guessing you've never seen anything like this before?
I have not in my almost 25 years of food banking, and I've responded to in New York City after 9/11 and was in Louisiana after Hurricane Katrina, and I've never seen anything like this. Of course, when food banks respond to a natural disaster, we're coming in after the disaster has happened. It's somewhat localized, and there are a lot of resources pouring into the community. Here, we're responding to a crisis that is evolving. It's growing. It's an infectious pandemic that's spreading, and resources are limited. So this is certainly unprecedented for all of us in the food bank network.
We're hearing about a 50% increase. We're hearing about major demand from seniors who are isolated. What are you seeing in Pittsburgh?
Yeah, so early on, we realized we would be getting inundated with phone calls from people who are newly unemployed. So we set up what we're calling a concierge line. We have three full-time dedicated staff who are handling phone calls for people who are calling that dedicated line. And just in the last 2 weeks, we've received over 1,600 calls. 90% of the people calling are calling to get food. They're desperate for food. And the vast majority of those people are newly unemployed. We also, while we don't have a food pantry on site at our warehouse facility, we typically would serve about 10 people a day who would come to our front door for food. Well, just again in the last 2 weeks, we've seen a 750% increase in people coming. We've served almost 1,000 people in the last 2 weeks who've come to our front door asking for food. And then on our website, we have a Get Help page where people can type in their zip code and find a food pantry in their neighborhood. We've had 7,500 unique views, again, in just the last 3 weeks. So the demand is incredible. With our large drive-up distributions, we've had five of them now. We had one yesterday, and we have served about 6,000 carloads of people in just those five distributions.
Wow, that is incredible. How is your staff meeting this demand? Are you hearing from more people who are volunteering? How does that work?
Yes. So at times of crisis, the community, our community is like many across the country, and I'm sure in the San Francisco area, people want to help. We have a very generous community across America, and people want to volunteer. They want to donate money. They want to help in any way, deliver meals to people's homes. And the challenge for us as a food bank is having so many people in our facility. So 2 weeks ago, we made the hard decision to not allow outside volunteers into our facility. And that was really to protect the health and the safety of our staff as well as the volunteers. So we have our staff filling in, and our governor did activate the National Guard on Thursday. So we also have some National Guard here assisting with packing our emergency food boxes. But the community has been great. Our staff has been amazing. We've worked tirelessly to find new and different ways to get food to people, including within 5 days testing a home delivery model that we are now going to be expanding and significantly grow in the next couple of weeks. And we believe it's a model that will last much longer than the crisis, that this will be a new way of food banking for us for the long term.
Lisa Scales is president and CEO of the Greater Pittsburgh Community Bank, and we have some footage on our website, yourcallradio.org, that the Pittsburgh Gazette captured of hundreds of cars lined up before the food bank even opened. The line was miles long, and some people waited 5 hours to get food there. We're also joined by Susan Bateson, executive director of the Alameda County Community Food Bank. They are now getting about 300 calls a day. 50% of people calling are first timers. Kathleen Lopez Landino is a volunteer with the food pantry in the Potrero Hill neighborhood of San Francisco. They are experiencing a 75% increase in demand. And if you have any questions for our incredible guest today, we'd love to hear from you. If there's a community group in your area that is providing food, or if you're also in need and you'd like to know how to go about getting assistance, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. I'd like to ask you all about qualifications, because here in California, I should say, Governor Gavin Newsom recently waived requirements for reporting, so beneficiaries do not have to prove how much money they earn to get, this is for food stamps. We also have a 3-day expedited service. And again, this is in California. You can go online to cafoodbanks.org. I was playing with the system yesterday and learned that there are pop-up food banks that do not require any sign-up process. And if you live in San Francisco or Marin, you can go to foodlocator.sfmfoodbank.org. Susan, can you just talk about, you know, the process involved in actually getting food as quickly as possible?
Well, I would suggest that if anyone in Alameda County knows someone who needs food assistance, please call our emergency food helpline, and the number is 510-635-3663. 510-635-3663. We do have a website, foodnow.net, but we do have organizations that are not able to serve the public, and the website will not be as accurate as our helpline. So we'd really prefer that people call that number. And there are many distributions in the community that people can avail themselves to. We have also started a direct distribution, and if someone were to call the helpline, they would find out where that is. It's in Oakland, and it's very accessible by freeway, and there's a very large parking lot where cars can go through. And I noticed that my colleague Lisa is on the phone, and hey, Lisa, I just want to say hello and thank you. I've seen the footage of the cars and couldn't believe it.
Thanks, Susan.
And Lisa, we'll ask you what it's like for the greater Pittsburgh area and how people can qualify. But first, Kathleen, for people in San Francisco, those who need food right now and, you know, they don't have time to fill out an application, what can people do to get food like today, for example?
Well, actually, in San Francisco, the San Francisco Marin Food Bank is similarly not requiring any sort of registration process or identification at this point. So you can go to the San Francisco Marin Food Bank link through Google and put in your location. And there's a listing of, I believe at this point, it's 19 individual pantries, most of which are located within schools. And there's a pantry a day that is open at least at a minimum. And you can just plug in your address. And you can go to any of the pantries citywide that are run by the food bank, with the exception of some of the other pantries like ours, which have moved from a citywide model to concentrating on a particular neighborhood. And in our case, reason that we usually are a citywide pantry, in contrast to the way it is usually done with a neighborhood. And we've done that so we're able to better serve the immediate neighborhood and do the home deliveries.
Great. Kathleen, is there an emergency hotline in San Francisco for people who don't have internet access?
You know, there is. And let me just quickly grab the number for that. if someone is located in the Potrero Hill area and they need assistance with home deliveries, they can call 415-255-8100 and just leave a message on our line, and we will get back to the person, and we can set up the home delivery on Saturdays. And I'll just grab that number really quickly.
Okay, and I just want to make sure I got that right, because we lost your line. Is it 415-255-8100?
That's correct, for our
great.
Specific pantry.
Okay,
and
great.
I will get you the number for the food bank in just a moment.
Okay, and while you're finding that number, I just want to mention, Chris just commented, Chris works with the Richmond Neighborhood Center, and they are operating food pantries 3 days a week for residents of the Richmond District in San Francisco. They've dedicated volunteers that make it possible to distribute over 20,000 pounds of food, and that website is richmondsf.org. And the address is 741 30th Avenue. And while Kathleen finds that number, Lisa, what is the situation like in the greater Pittsburgh area for people who need food immediately?
Yes, people can go to our website, pittsburghfoodbank.org, and at the top of that website page, there will be a Get Help button. And if you click on the Get Help button, it will take you to a locator map where you can enter your zip code and find a food pantry in your neighborhood. We also have people who are calling into the food bank at 412-460-3663, and extension 655 will take you to the concierge line where we can assist you with finding a food right away.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. And we will also put these numbers on our website and social media. Kathleen, were you able to find that emergency number for San Francisco?
You know, I'll have it in just 1 second. For some reason, it just...
okay, no problem.
Computer just went down. I would like to mention, though, that one
sure.
of the things that I think is extremely important is that many of the seniors and people who are more homebound in general don't necessarily have access to technology. And there is some difficulty, realistically, in reaching people who are homebound currently. So if individuals know of someone in their neighborhood or someone just in general, please make sure that you've asked them if they are aware of food resources, so that you can actually assist that person in obtaining them. Because there are many isolated seniors who aren't aware that there are any resources to help.
Right. It's such a great point. To try to check in on your neighbors. In fact, in my neighborhood, people are actually putting pieces of paper on doorsteps because we know that so many people do not use the internet and do not have computers. So thank you for that reminder. I wanted to ask all of you also, people are interested in volunteering. Can you also talk about the importance of financial contributions? Susan, I've read it at Feeding America that $1 equals 10 meals. Can you talk about how that works?
So that is the Feeding America number. In our community, $1 helps us provide $7 worth of food. So the point is that food banks, because of their buying power, can really stretch donors' dollars. So even $1 can make such a difference in our ability to provide food in our community. And we are so fortunate to live in California where we can avail ourselves at very good prices to healthy and wonderful fresh produce. And we use our donors' dollars to buy that product and make sure that's going in the community. And I can't emphasize enough how important taking care of ourselves and eating healthily is at this point in time. And we all should be able to do that.
Right. Lisa, the bigger question here, and we're going to do shows about this in the coming months, but this is really showing people that there is so much food insecurity in this country. I mean, yes, demand is up 75%, 50% at food banks, but even before COVID-19, demand was pretty high, right?
That's right. In southwestern Pennsylvania, where we serve the communities, 350,000 people are food insecure. And that is shocking to many people. And now they're receiving a new shock when they realize all the people who are now newly unemployed. So the numbers have quadrupled, obviously, here in southwestern Pennsylvania and across the country. And in terms of the financial donations, they're so important. Really appreciate our friends in California sending produce our way after they serve all the residents of California who are in need. And we're grateful for that produce, and we do are still accepting produce. But we've had to purchase a lot of shelf-stable items that aren't normally donated so that people can have those items and won't need to come out of their house for several weeks. And shelf-stable items like tuna fish, peanut butter, canned fruits and vegetables are not normally donated anymore. And typically in 2 months, we would spend about $600,000 on those purchase orders, on purchasing those items. And just for the months of March and April, we're expending $1.7 million to purchase those shelf-stable items. So the financial contributions are very much in need here in Pittsburgh.
Wow. Lisa, just quickly, you reminded me of the $2 trillion bill that passed a couple weeks ago. We know that there's $500 billion for corporations. Is there any money in that bill for food banks?
Well, there is. The payroll protection program is available to both for-profits and nonprofits.
And so will you be receiving financial help from this bill directly?
Well, we are considering that. We actually just had a conversation about it today with our development folks and our CFO. So we're looking into making that application.
All right. And before we end, Lisa, final thoughts, about 30 seconds.
Well, I want to say that lending a hand and helping a neighbor in need is what Pittsburgh does best. And I know that that's true across the country and certainly in the San Francisco area. So just so grateful for all those people who are lending a hand and helping a neighbor in need. We're so grateful for the help that we're getting. We know the need is tremendous. And by working together, we will do our very best to meet that need, both in the immediate next month and two, but we also know that the need will be at a high level, at least for the next 12 to 18 months.
Lisa Scales is president of the Greater Pittsburgh Community Food Bank. Lisa, thank you so much for your work, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And Susan, quick final thoughts.
We are better together. I want the community to know that Alameda County Community Food Bank will be in business for as long as we're needed, that we are preparing for a long response, and we are better together, helping our neighbors, looking for opportunities to volunteer, and giving money are very important. Also, if you need help, please reach out. We are here to help you.
That emergency number for Alameda is 510-635-3663. Susan Bateson is Executive Director of the Alameda County Community Food Bank. Susan, thank you so much for your work, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you very, very much, Rose.
And Kathleen, we're almost out of time. Did you find that phone number?
I did. The number is 415-282-1900, and you can call 211 within the state of California. United Way will help you locate resources in your community.
Great. Thank you so much. Kathleen Lopez-Landino is a volunteer with the Food Pantry in Potrero Hill of San Francisco. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.